Hey, everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome to our final episode of 2025. Here to watch the ball drop with my good friend and managing editor, Kayleen Brown. Kayleen, Happy New Year.
Oh, Happy New Year. And what a year it's been.
It's been amazing. It's been amazing. We brought back Device Talks Minnesota to a roaring success. I cried on stage a little. That was touching.
Same. And I think a lot of the audience, too.
I think they did. Well, Brooke's story really warmed us all up. We were like, oh, my God, what a great moment that was. I don't know. I wasn't going to do top moments of the year, but that came to mind. So that was probably certainly one of them, Device Talks-wise. But I've really, enjoyed working with you years ago, and every year we work together here at Device Talks is better than the last. So I'm excited about 2026.
Oh, same. Like I think about this year and I just am full of gratitude to you, Tom, for all of the opportunities that you afforded me and to our listeners. And this was the year that we crossed over to 1 million plays on the podcast
network. That's a great point. Yep.
So, I mean, talk about highlight and just the pride that I have personally for building something that people clearly care about. And, I couldn't have done that without you and without our listeners.
I will let our listeners inside on our occasional Slack conversations. Kayleen means what she says, and she every once in a while says, I can't believe I get to do this. Thank you so much. And I say, there's no way I could do this without you. Thank you so much. And that's I fire that right back at you, Kayleen. This is not possible without your help and your magic, because you keep these things running. It's just it's insane what it's amusing to me how many people think we have like a team.
I know. Joke's on them. You're looking at it.
You're hearing it. Yeah, you're looking at it. For the most part, we have some help with some of the video editing, and obviously we don't book the conference space ourselves, but we've got some back end help with the webinars. But by and large, anything creative is us. And Kayleen, one area where you've really been so critical is working with our sponsors. I mean, they love you. They love you.
Oh.
They do. And I think you would agree that, we can't do any of this without them. Without their support, without them stepping up, without them contributing not only support, but also creatively. I mean, you really draw some amazing things out of our sponsors and our FOMOs and our messaging and everything else. So thank you to our sponsors, and thank you for working with them so closely. It's really great to have their voice as part of Device Talks.
Not only would it be impossible to do it without them, I don't think I'd want to do it without them.
Yep.
There's an entirely, or this other layer in medtech that I feel like we get the opportunity to share and bring visibility to. And it's what our sponsors do.
Yep.
They supply components, they supply services to build better devices. It's an honor to share those stories.
Well said. Well said. All right. Well, we have a jam-packed episode here. We've got the entire editorial team and a very special guest that we'll introduce in a moment. And this is our last episode of 2025, but we won't have one. Last episode of 2025, we won't have one on Friday, January 2nd, but we'll be back on January 9th. And just a great year, Kayleen. And I was going to bring this up earlier, but the Women in MedTech podcast. I mean, speaking of sponsors, I was closing things out, but I love this podcast. I love the interaction you're having with our sponsors at the start. I love the fact that you're bringing them in and making them part of the episode as so well. I mean, it's just you've got a mastery for making people feel welcome and for allowing them to be part of it. So, well done.
Well, that's all I need for Christmas. I just got my gift. Thank you. That's really so, especially coming from you. That's pretty amazing. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, we will stop talking about ourselves, and we will thank everyone for being part of Device Talks. And let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Woo-hoo! Hey folks, Tom again. Just want to give you a quick rundown of this week's episode of Device Talks Weekly. First, we'll kick off with one of our FOMO interviews. Kayleen Brown sits down with Dr. Oliver Keown. He's the CEO of Oath Surgical. As you'll hear, Oath Surgical has a great approach on ASCs, on bringing in AI and other technologies into the clinical space and hopefully advancing medical care. So Oliver's a very interesting person with a great background, and Kayleen will unpack all of that in this interview. Then we'll follow up that conversation with our year-end review. We'll have the entire editorial team here to talk about the highlights of 2025. On the panel will be Jim Hamrand of Medical Design and Outsourcing, Sean Hooley of Mass Device, Kayleen Brown, of course, of Device Talks, Chris Newmarker of Mass Device, and myself. And very happy to have a guest panel member on board, Chris Landon, the CEO of Natus Medical. Folks in medtech, no doubt know Chris very well. He joined Natus in 2024. Previously, he was president and general manager for image-guided therapy devices at Royal Philips. And prior to that, he held several management positions, including leadership roles at Medtronic. Chris is very active in the Minnesota medtech space. He's on the board of Medical Alley and also has held board assignments on the American Heart Association and other organizations. So Chris is really plugged into medtech and very happy to have him as part of our panel conversation. So we'll kick off this episode with Kayleen's interview with Dr. Oliver Keown of Oath Surgical. Follow up with our review of 2025 with Chris Landon and the editorial team. And then we'll wrap up the year and see you in 2026.
Dr. Oliver Keown, CEO of Oath Surgical. Welcome to the Future of MedTech Opportunities. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, delighted to be here.
So the entire point of this series is to look at the future so that we can get everybody as part of the Device Talks audience and beyond excited about the future of MedTech. So we want to know a little bit more about Oath Surgical. So let's start there. What brought you to Oath Surgical?
So we're tackling surgical care in a broad sense, and surgery is a $1 trillion segment of healthcare. And it hasn't been rebuilt in the last 40 years. It's a patchwork of systems. It's a lot of misalignment. And at Oath Surgical, what we're looking to create is an integrated system, one that brings together surgeon ownership, technology infrastructure and stack that spans referral all the way to recovery, and alignment with patients, providers, and payers to really unlock the opportunity of value-based care, being care in the outpatient setting can be a fraction of the cost at a higher quality than legacy surgical care. And that's what we're really building at Oath Surgical.
Maybe take it back just a couple of steps for us. So how did you find your way into medtech, and then what was so intriguing about Oath Surgical?
Yeah, so I've had the opportunity to see healthcare from the physician's perspective, from the investor perspective, from the policy and technology perspective. And it was in those environments that I saw the fragmentation. I saw the rising costs. I saw the lack of alignment between delivering value and quality versus volume. And I also had the unique opportunity to see the incredible opportunity that technology and innovation can unlock in terms of digital tools and technologies, but also what's happening in the operating room. Incredible surgeons with incredible talents enabled with technology and devices like what we're seeing and hearing about today is creating the opportunity for better outcomes, higher quality care, quicker discharge, and quicker recovery for patients. So seeing these different angles, seeing the opportunity that care can be delivered high quality in the outpatient setting was a huge factor. And seeing that in this kind of AI era, we have the opportunity to leverage technology and digital and software in a much more integrated fashion led me to see both the opportunity and the challenges, and hence why I started Oath Surgical.
It's so interesting. One of the common origin stories that I find being in medtech for 19 years is when I have a guest who starts as a physician and starts touching the other points of the medtech innovation ecosystem, kind of comes to this conclusion that I can have more impact, arguably, on millions instead of thousands. Do you feel that both surgical and how you've kind of evolved as part of your career, that you have more touch points?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I love my time practicing clinically. It was a short part of my career. I spent much more time in technology and innovation and investing. But the opportunity to apply business model innovation with technology, with service, with the insights that I've been fortunate to gain about what frontline care looks and feels like. That's what's led me on my journey. And I think what we're trying to do at OVE and what we're succeeding and scaling in a really exciting way is equipping surgeons with the tools, with the technology, so that they can deliver their best care, and scaling an operating system so that we can provide that support to many surgeons across many specialties. And that's the essence of OVE Surgical, really surgeon-led, AI-enabled, value-based by design, and a system that is multi-specialty across all of surgery.
That's really, really exciting. One of the reasons, Oliver, that I asked you to join us on the podcast is I wanted to better understand the ambulatory surgery centers and what the challenges are today and what it could look like in the future. So for our audience, can you unpack the current challenges with ASCs?
Yeah, absolutely. So today, the landscape of ASCs, outpatient surgical centers, ambulatory surgical centers, it's incredibly fragmented. From a digital perspective, it's digitally naive. There's a lot of different point solutions, much like we see in hospitals, but in the ASC even more, there's a lot of different point solutions. If the ASC has actually made the step to digitize and become kind of software-led, so many of the surgical centers out there are still on pads and paper for how they chart. So digital fragmentation and naivety is one of those challenges. Being set up for value-based care, for delivering and measuring outcomes and cost, and the kind of complex partnership and financial payment models needed to actually partner in a value-based care fashion is also something that the ASC landscape today has yet to embrace. And finally, I think as you look at the current kind of landscape of ASCs, there's a lot of single specialty, very, very fantastically delivered and operated single specialty ASCs in a pretty narrow domain of surgical clinical specialties, ortho, dermatology, ophthalmology. Where we see the puck headed is actually complex care across multi-specialty services shifting from the hospital into the outpatient setting. However, needs a new operating model, one that can support multi-specialty service delivery in an outpatient setting and support complex care to shift. Complex care requiring the understanding of quality, the measurement of quality, and the support of the patient episodes in their recovery. So these are some of the landscape kind of both challenges and opportunities that OVE is addressing with our integrated system that brings the digital with the value-based care design to a multi-specialty service platform.
So you said complex care.
That's right.
For the layperson, what does that mean?
As you think about hospitals today, that's where you think of, you know, sick patients or complex surgeries that might require general anesthetic or multiple days of inpatient stay in a hospital. The reality is a lot of that inpatient stay is a symptom of the system itself and some of the inefficiencies and the lack of alignment around, you know, what great surgical care can be. And very often the case is in day case procedures. And so what OVE is doing is partnering with quality vetted surgeons who are aligned to delivering complex surgical care in the outpatient setting. That means that our patients with OVE are receiving complex gynecology, urology, general surgery, colorectal, orthopedics in a fashion where they can be discharged the same day. So they're being discharged in hours and minutes, not days and weeks. And that is where, you know, we see the puck headed, that complex care can be delivered safely in a system like OVE at scale.
There's so much here that's exciting. And I'm just going to put the business hat on for a moment. Less time in the outpatient,
yep.
But in the hospital, like less time the patient's there, the more money the ecosystem makes. Like it really is a business. And thinking about the patient, you don't have to worry as much about infection or, you know, any of the other challenges that come with long stays. So that's really encouraging. And then there's another thing about ASCs that I just find so very promising is meeting patients where they are, which feels like it should have always been part of our strategy and the way that we approach medtech. And I'm so happy to see that we're getting there. It isn't just about getting to the surgery and then you're done.
It's about childcare. It's about taking time off of work.
That's right.
It's even down to finding parking.
Yep.
I mean, these are real challenges. And then add in clinician burnout, add in workflow issues. I mean, these are all things that having an ASC really helps to solve. And the way that you've been able to step that up with complex care, that's so exciting. If you were to think about what you can do with Oats Surgical and exactly what we're talking about right now in the next 5 years, and I'm not going to hold you to anything, but what is your most hopeful view of the future of ASCs and what you're doing?
Absolutely. A system revolution towards the outpatient for complex surgical care, distributed, local, patient-centric, surgeon-centric in a model and value-based care by design. So it's the same surgeons, it's safer patient care at half the cost. That's what we see the future of surgery, and that's what we're trying to scale with Oats Surgical.
And if you were able to choose or think of a future that's 20 years from now, because you said revolution and caught my attention, what could that look like? No holds barred. What does it look like?
I think, you know, what we're seeing here, it's about connectivity. It's devices and digital and service and data. I think what is the opportunity of an ecosystem of local surgical centers that are aligned to patients and surgeons, and the connectivity of advanced minimally invasive technologies and robotics and telesurgery, and the kind of system change that can happen when you think about episodes of care and value-based care. You know, I think we're going to see just an incredible transformation of the unbundled healthcare system of the past to being a much more integrated, personalized, data-driven and efficient system for patients. And that's what we're trying to build.
Oh, this really is the best industry in the world. And I'm so thrilled that you're part of it. Thank you so much, Oliver, for joining us on FOMO. It was an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, mine too. Thank you.
Hey, everyone, this is Tom Salami. Welcome back to Device Talks Weekly. I'm here with my podcast partner, Chris Neumarker. Chris, hey.
Good to be here as always. But man, you know, usually it's us just sitting around, you know, joking around, like delivering the news. But, you know, we got a crowd here today.
Yeah, we've got the Mass Device Talks Christmas holiday party here. And we've got a gate crasher. Chris Landon, the CEO of Natus Neuro, wanted to hang out with us and talk about the year of medtech. So, Chris, thanks for joining
us. And thanks for inviting me, Tom. And lucky you get not one, but two Chrises today. I only have one request for you. Don't call me Little Chris today, okay? Please don't do that.
I'm the one who'd usually be called a Little Chris, probably.
we'll go with Mr. Landon. How's that sound?
Mr. Landon. Actually.
All right. We'll figure it out. And we're also here with Kayleen Brown, Device Talks Managing Editor. Kayleen, welcome.
Hello.
Great to have you back on the podcast. Rounding up the team, we've got Jim Hammerian, Managing Editor of Medical Design and Outsourcing. Jim, looking forward to your thoughts.
Hey, Tom. Hey, team. Hi, Chris. Nice to meet you.
And last and most, Sean Hooley, Senior Editor of Mass Device. Sean, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Last and most that's the first time I've ever heard that.
I always think last but not least seems a little dismissive, so I'm saying your most, Sean.
You're
most.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good to be here.
All right. So we're going to run through our views of the top news. We're going to talk about the top tech of the year, the top person or company of the year, and then what we think is the top news of the year. But Chris Landon, you've been on the podcast twice now. Once earlier on, you were an early fan of ours in our pumpkin sausage obsession phase, and you were on the right side of the rules there and against pumpkin sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're CEO of Natus Neuro. You've been on the podcast once talking about that, but that was a couple years ago. Give us a little rundown, or some folks may have missed that episode and may want to learn a bit more about Natus Neuro. Give us a little update, and do you have any news to report from Natus Neuro? How was your year?
Well, thanks, Tom. And believe it or not, it's 2 years now. I'm coming up on my 2-year anniversary since I took over as the CEO of Natus Medical. And we've been on a great journey. And I think we're going to get into the topic of neurosciences and how emerging technologies, cloud-based computing and AI technologies are changing the medical device field. Certainly, they're having an impact in our world as well. And we've been at the forefront in our company trying to bring new innovation to market, leveraging these technologies, trying to scale the capabilities of clinicians across many more patients. And that's what's really exciting to me, not just about what's happening in my own company, but what's happening across the entire industry. The ability to bring some of these emerging technologies to bear on increasing patient access. And I think we've talked so many times about the importance of bringing patients first mentality into the med tech field. And that's what this technology does. So I'm really excited about the technology we've been bringing, new products like AutoScore, a new product that we call BrainWatch, which is bringing point of care EEG into parts of the hospital that don't have typically access to those capabilities. These are the things that are going to allow more patient access and better outcomes at the end of the day. And I know I've seen the preview of the things we're going to talk about. There's so many awesome things that have happened just in the last 12 months in our industry that are leveraging these technologies for the exact same reason. I'm really excited to be here.
Hey, and just to you know, help fill in some people more who might not be aware of Natus. I mean, Chris, tell everybody here just really quick. You know, I mean, what is the technology that Natus is advancing? Yeah.
Thanks for the question, Chris. Appreciate it. Natus is the world's largest pure-play neurodiagnostics company. We produce solutions that are comprised of services, hardware, and software that help clinicians diagnose diseases of the nervous system. The biggest market that we play in is in electrophysiology for the brain, EEG diagnostics. We really are focused primarily on what the electrical signals the brain can tell us about things such as seizures, epilepsy, movement disorders, and those kinds of maladies. We are also in diagnostics of neuromuscular health as well. So we can diagnose movement disorders with our solutions, pain disorders, those kinds of situations. And then we also have quite a big presence in the neuro ICU. So we help manage patients with ICP technology, managing fluid pressure in the brain. Trying to make sure that those patients get to stabilization and ultimately get into care pathways that drive good outcomes. What we're really excited about is bringing new AI-based technology and simplified diagnostic technology into various areas of the hospital that allow patients to get diagnosed more quickly and get into the right care pathways more rapidly. We think that not only is great for workflow efficiency in the hospital, which opens up access for more patients, but also drives outcomes at the end of the day. So that's what we're all about. It's been a great ride for our company over the last 2 years, riding this wave of innovation. We've been absolutely on fire in the market and really excited to be here to tell the story and to participate in our year-end activities.
It's really a wild coincidence. Like earlier today, I was having coffee with a former professor from the U, and we talked some about EEGs actually. And one of the things he mentioned, which was new to me, was that EEGs and AI could potentially, it sounds like that's not in the wheelhouse of what you're doing. We were saying like it could potentially be used for blood glucose readings, like non-invasive blood glucose monitoring. I mean, is that something you've heard about?
I think a lot of researchers in the field of EEG are trying to figure out how we can leverage AI technology to work through the massive amounts of data that these diagnostic technologies kick off so that we can do more things than just diagnose seizures, just diagnose epilepsy. So for example, there's quite a bit of research going into the reading of EEGs to help predict the risk of stroke and to get in front of a stroke before it happens. This is not technology that's 10 years into the future. This is happening right now, and we're getting closer and closer to that. Likewise, we can potentially use EEG to diagnose different types of mental health disorders. Now, we aren't there yet, but this is where the research has taken us, and none of this is possible without the power of AI to help human beings process through the massive amounts of data that that these EEG diagnostics produce. So it's a really exciting time for the industry of neurodiagnostics and neuroscience overall. And I know that at some point we're going to get into the world of Neuralink and brain-computer interface and all the things that are happening. All of it is based on the electrical capabilities of the brain and our ability to measure those signals and to do something with them.
Well, let's begin, Chris Landon. And I realize I always call Chris Newmarker, Chris Newmarker. So he'll be Chris Newmarker, and you can be either Chris Landon or just Chris. Chris, you're our visitor, and you've also got a little more experiences in this industry than we do, having been with Medtronic and Philips prior to your current stint. So we will let you lead us off. So the first topic we'll focus on is the tech of the year. So this is, we're just going to go use our memories or the archives of Mass Device and Medical Design and Outsourcing, look at some of the big news generated by technology of the year. And what impressed us the most? We'll start with you, Chris Landon. What impressed you the most for technology?
I think there was so much amazing innovation that came out this year. If you look in the world of just home diagnostics and home electronics, mm-hmm. and our ability to use consumer devices to help patients get heads up on the need to get in and to do further cardiac diagnostics or neurodiagnostics or whatever the case may be. I think that stuff's been amazing. Obviously, you can't have a conversation around technology of the year and not bring AI into the conversation. That's been amazing. I've also been really impressed with some of our more the innovations in more traditional interventions. I'm particularly impressed with what's happening in the world of neuro intervention and neurological implants. Obviously, taking a look at Boston Scientific's acquisition of Nalu and Medtronic's technology with deep brain stimulation that's come out this year. So many great things, but I don't know how you can look at 2025 and not call it the year of the robot. I just feel like this is the year that everybody reestablished their or reset their expectations around what surgical robotics can do for us. It's no longer a novelty item. It's no longer about capital equipment in a hospital. It is really about a strategic tool that can be used to increase access to surgical care for patients all around the world. And I don't think you can look at it as anything more than or less than an extension of a surgeon's capability across many more patients than they were able to reach before. This is the same thing I was referring to when I was talking about what AI can do in the world of neurodiagnostics for my own company. It is the exact same thing, I think, in the world of surgery. I'm really excited about the blending of AI and robotics technology in the service of patients in the surgical realm. What Intuitive is doing is amazing. What other companies with robots are doing is amazing. I know Medtronic got their Hugo approval. That's amazing. I'm really excited to see how this is going to change the face of medicine. And I think 2025 will go down as the year of robotics.
I think that's a great choice. I'm with you. I mean, I've been following the surgical robotics for a very long time now, since it's really started. But for me, like, this is the first year I'm like, oh, this is clearly a medical device. It's clearly, you know, it's not, I never thought it was a gadget or a gimmick, but this is the first year I really saw how it's going to be an integral part of healthcare going forward. So I really do think there's been a tipping point for surgical robotics.
It's just great to see more competition, and I'm a strong believer that, you know, competition begets innovation. So it's going to be fun to see all this going on.
All right, let's roll on to our next expert on the panel, Kayleen Brown. What technology really bowled you over this year?
Well, first, I just want to comment on what Chris said. I couldn't agree more. Wow, what a really great choice.
totally.
Second to that. In 2023, I actually named artificial intelligence as my top tech. And then last year, it was BCI. So it's really fun that this year I'm kind of reflecting on when I first started in the industry 2 decades ago. And there was a particular technology that was so far away, that was so sci-fi, that I knew that once it happened, then from my perspective, MedTech has made it. And that's the total artificial heart. I have been so intrigued by this technology, again, for 2 decades, and now it feels like we're really here. So when I say total artificial heart, I mean the real heart replacement technology that's actually working in living systems, and it's moving toward real patient use. For me, it just feels like we're not waiting for death for positive outcomes. Now we're moving forward, saving lives in a way that isn't clouded or dragged down by misery. So Total Artificial Heart is really exciting. Just this year alone, we have Syncardia's next-gen Emperor Total Artificial Heart. We have Vivacore's Titanium Total Artificial Heart. And then there's other companies that are working on it as well, like Real Heart, Karma. All of them are pushing total artificial hearts this year. So my heart and artificial hearts are all working for the top tech of 2025.
Yeah, I keyed into this early this year. I mean, you know, because I was like posting on LinkedIn about Vivacore and like Syncardia. Like, it's like, hey, us too. We've had one. You know, they're the only ones that have had one approved in the US, you know, for the past, you know, decade. But they were like, hey, we've got a totally implantable version we're working on. And that was like a really, really fun interview that I did for this podcast about what they were doing. And I mean, you know, we have ventricular assist devices out there through Abbott, but those only, you know, support, you know, like the left ventricle. I mean, so to have something that could replace the entire heart if necessary, I mean, is just, yeah, as you said, really a life-saving technology. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I grew up in the 80s and this was like something that was part of, you know, like that you're saying was going to happen someday. And it's really cool to see us getting so much closer to it now.
And it's what's really fun, too, is this technology is inspiring some innovation in other organs. Just this week, I was talking with the co-founder of Nefertiti. They just got breakthrough device designation from the FDA for what they say is going to be kind of a replacement kidney system on helping patients unhook from dialysis centers. And they said they were first inspired by all these years ago seeing a prototype of an artificial heart. And they said, well, hey, maybe that could be done with the kidney, too. And all these years later, they're hoping to get into first in human trials, you know, within the next couple of years and maybe have something on the market soon after. So really great to see how that kind of innovation can spread. And when people see you're working on one thing, people say, well, why can't I do that in my own area?
That's fantastic. And I will plug our cardiac innovation series coming up in February in Device Talks Tuesday. Syncardia will be one of our presenting companies. So if you're interested in hearing more about the story, check out Chris's great interviews with them earlier this year on the podcast. And join us in February for a live presentation where you can ask questions. Sean Ouley, what do you got from your side of the medtech world?
It should be no surprise to anybody that it's going to be diabetes tech, but I can piggyback off Kayleen's because it's sometimes referred to as an artificial pancreas, but the automated insulin delivery system is my tech of the year. Oddly enough, there really weren't that many massive developments, I suppose. A few companies have started to roll it out for the type 2 diabetes population, which I think is pretty incredible that, you know, just that many more patients can access this technology. But I think it sort of tees us up for the future where you have Medtronic's got two pumps on the way, the next gen, you know, MiniMed Flex, and then the Fit, which is their patch pump. Beta Bionics and Tandem Diabetes Care also have patch pumps on the way. So that whole market is about to be filled with competition for Insulet, which has obviously been dominating it for quite a while. It'll be very interesting to watch the market shape up. So I'm kind of looking at the tech in a future lens, but also it has evolved over the past year. I know Insulet also talked about its next gen versions and also enhanced some of the algorithms. And they're talking about, you know, fully autonomous stuff, which Beta Bionics also uses. So it's a pretty wide ranging market with a lot of different tech and continuing to grow. And I'm kind of excited to watch it unfold in the next year or two as well.
So, Sean, I really like your observation, and I know I said that surgical robotics was my technology of the year. If you hadn't already put in the spreadsheet that you were going to do diabetes care, I probably would have gone there as well. If you just think about the amazing things that are happening in the industry, obviously we have great companies like Insulet and Dexcom already in the industry. Medtronic announces a partnership with Abbott. How often does that happen in real life?
Right.
Yeah. And then the spinoff of Medtronic's diabetes business, you just get a sense that innovation is about to get really unleashed in that space as well. And given how prevalent that disease is and the need in the market, that patient first mentality is always present in my mind. I just think it's a great year for diabetes care.
And just seeing Dexcom kind of shift over to the mainstream and become more of a consumer product, and I think inspire more medtech in that regard. And
Abbott as well on that front.
I mean, really fascinating. And to Chris Landon's earlier point about just consumer tech becoming more visible and really bringing more medtech front and center And another shameless plug, we'll have Insulet CEO Ashley McEvoy at Device Talks Boston.
One of the big CEO appointments of the year.
Yeah, fantastic. Really excited to have her there. So,
it's gonna be really
all
cool.
Right, Chris Neumarker, what are you bringing to this conversation?
Well, you know, gosh, I think it was about a decade ago, I was at a conference and there was a professor who worked with DARPA who was like showing like all these like futuristic things that DARPA was looking to do someday and, you know, or fund, you know, like that could happen in med tech. And one of the big things he talked about was, you know, incisionless surgery, the idea that you could use ultrasound to do an incision, like surgery inside someone's body without an incision. And now, you know, I think this is the year we really started to see it becoming a reality. I mean, especially, you know, the one company that really, you know, sticks in my mind is right here in the Twin Cities where we're based, Chris. I mean, this is Sonics. You know, I went over there and just visited, you know, about a month or so ago. You know, they're based behind the Lunds and Byerly's I usually shop at here in Plymouth. You know, I'll probably be going over there tomorrow for Sushi Wednesday. But you know, but this is Sonics. I mean, I was just I thought it was just like fantastic how, I mean, this is like focused ultrasound energy that liquefies tumors, and they have like a robotic component, you know, robotic system with, you know, image guided, you know, systems around it, you know, because really they couldn't rely on like a new, you know, field of medicine to be developed around this technology. So they really like automated it as much as possible. So that radiologists, I mean, maybe even like, you know, cardiologists could use the system to liquefy tumors. It's already got a de novo authorization, you know, to treat liver cancer. And my gosh, they've really brought in some major investments into their company. I mean, there's Jeff Bezos money, Peter Thiel money going to that company. And, you know, we're seeing other companies like, you know, with similar type technology. I mean, Tom, you've been, you know, talking with Pedal Surgical that's kind of gone out of stealth mode, and they've got, you know, incisionless ultrasound tech. And, you know, I'm starting to see other stories that we're, you know, covering on Mass Device with companies like kind of using focused ultrasound or, you know, using similar technologies. So I just think that's very exciting because, I mean, the less time somebody has to go under the knife to get something taken care of, I mean, the better.
Yeah, Prashchop for the CEO of Pedal Surgical has a really, I think, a very medtech story about why he wanted to start this company and why he wanted to find a way to treat people's tissue, correct people's tissue without the cuts of surgery. And it sounds fanciful, but then you hear them talk about it, and it's one of these things that is definitely possible.
And I'm really glad Mike Blue, the CEO of Sonics, had me over there. It's probably one of the funnest parts of my job. I could go over there and see his system like obliterate a piece of chicken liver and some like, you know, block of stuff, you know, and, you know, just see the thing in action. And we're going to have Mike as a keynote speaker at Device Talks Minnesota next year, which will be really
there
cool.
There you go. I thought you were going to make me do the plug. Yes, Chris Neumarker got Mike Blue to do be a keynote guest at Device Talks Minnesota, which is happening on May 4th at the McNamara Alumni Center.
I would just like to add, and Chris, I appreciate you bringing up Histosonics as an example. You know, we spend so much time talking about digital health and all the innovation on the digital side. This is good old-fashioned science applied to medical technology. The idea of using sound to create bubbles that destroy tissue. It's the exact same technology or same concept that is used in lithotripsy as well, which was also a big story in 2025 with Boston acquiring Bolt. But the idea of bringing those sound bubbles to destroy or to resolve lesions in the vasculature, this is science applied to medical devices that I think changes lives. It allows for less invasive care. Patients get better outcomes. They get to go home more quickly out of the hospital. The economics are more favorable. That kind of science is what this industry is about at the end of the day. And I appreciate very much that you brought it up.
All right, great choice. Let's move to Jim Hamrin. Jim, what caught your eye? You cover all the tech there is to cover in medical design outsourcing. You're always churning out great content, and folks can find it on LinkedIn. And I'm always fascinated by some of the stuff you're putting out there. So what was your one or two of your favorites?
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Tom. You know, I picked something that I think might have flown a little bit under the radar for a lot of people. And you and I were just recently chatting about my favorite med tech metal, right? Nitinol. And we got to wondering, what is the next Nitinol? And I didn't have a good answer at the time. But I've been thinking about it, and I think the next Nitinol is probably shape memory Nitinol. So we all know about super elastic Nitinol, like the eyeglasses that you can crumple up and they snap back their shape. And that's used mainly for catheter-delivered implants. You want to squeeze down for delivery, then they expand inside the patient, or, you know, PFA catheter is another good example. So you go in the heart, pull back the sheath, out pops an ablation catheter in one of the many different shapes they take. But shape memory is the ability to shape set a device's geometry using heat. And then you can deform that Nitinol with force. You squeeze it, you bend it. You can get it to return to the preset shape by applying heat. And this usually requires more heat than you'd want to deliver inside of a patient. But when you think about the possibilities, what if you could place a heart implant in a patient and then go back in later with a minimally invasive electromagnetic catheter to adjust its size? Mm. And so that is exactly what Chief of Meds Adana Medical is doing with their Delphi adjustable heart shunt. So using non-contact heat, plenty of insulation to protect the patient. We had a Device Talks West panel with Adana CEO and co-founder Brian Fahey in October. You can go to MDO for the technical details of their device design features, but they just completed their first in human trials this year. And this, to me, seems like the very start of the next exciting stage for Nitinol.
Jim, I have to wonder, is there future possibility applications for pediatric care? Because you're talking about growing.
Yeah, it's not hard to imagine, right? You hear about kids that get heart valves implanted, and then they have to go in for surgeries to place larger implants as their hearts grow. So that's definitely one of the exciting things that people are talking about, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, you're limited on the number of points that you can actually get into the body when it comes to pediatrics. So you kind of run out of the number of times that you can have a surgery done on a pediatric patient. So the idea that it could be more minimally invasive and can grow with the patient, grow with the child, that's a miracle.
Yeah, once you start thinking about all the different ways you could apply this, it really is exciting. And again, this isn't a huge technology like, you know, renal denervation for hypertension, but looking down the road, I'm excited to see where it goes.
So basically, Nitinol, which was already cool, is going to get even cooler.
Yeah. I mean, this is like kind of the second stage, the first big thing. Yeah, that's pseudoelasticity or superelasticity. That's what's so famous for. And a lot of people sometimes confuse the two, that with shape memory. But yeah, strap in. Let's watch what happens. And you know that people are there's got to be a lot of other companies in stealth mode that are working on different applications. I mean, even Adana Medical was really holding things close to the chest. And they're just now starting to talk about how exactly they do what they do.
That's fantastic. I knew you were upset that you didn't have an answer for me when I asked you that on Slack. I was trying to come up with a panel conversation.
It haunted me, Tom. Glad we came back to it.
You delivered. Well, that's a great, great choice. And I'll wrap up with my selection. We've already hit upon it a few times, brain-computer interfaces. This just strikes me. I mean, the level of dollars going in, I think, is completely ridiculous might be strong, but there's so much money going into a concept that isn't nearly proven out. But I think the potential is so damn high, and the of what brain-computer interfaces can do, what they could accomplish, how they could help people who can't move to interact with the world, how they can help people who can't see. I mean, just the sky, I think, is the limit with this. I think there's a lot of questions. I was talking with a neuro investor yesterday, who, you know, says there's still a lot of hesitancy about patients have hesitancy about implants going into their brain, which I completely understand. But I think there's probably going to be workarounds for that. And I think in 10 or 15 years, we're going to be really seeing the fruit being born from this technology wave. And I think all the dollars, well, now we'll see how they do as investments, will be moving, I think, just an extremely exciting field forward. And on top of the medical benefit for me, anything that adds sizzle to medtech and to really captures the imagination and attention of folks who aren't in our industry and gets them excited about what's being done in our industry, I think is positive for our industry. And BCIs certainly are doing that.
Chris. Sure. I mean, you know, one of the major players, of course, is Elon Musk's Neuralink, and, you know, Musk is controversial. But I mean, would you say, like, I mean, just having that Musk involvement, I think has just gotten a lot more attention and interest overall to all the different companies that are working in that space. You know, is that playing a role in kind of like helping to drive the interest in the funding?
I honestly don't know. I think Elon Musk is a double-edged sword.
Yeah. But
I don't know if anyone else has strong feelings one way or
the
other.
Yeah, Chris, I understand why you might feel that way. I like to believe that the science drives the innovation at the end of the day. And where we're at in the world of neuroscience is kind of a new enlightened phase where there's a lot more standardization around interpreting the electrical signals that are coming off the brain. That is the very first step in the building block towards being able then to manipulate those signals to do things. And as more and more collaborators bring tools like AI to bear on these challenges, more insights and more capabilities are developed. And so it is clearly the case now with BCI where we've reached the point of we're no longer doing science experiments. This is technology that can be developed and commercialized. And that's the right time for capital to come in. And it's extremely helpful when celebrity investors like Elon Musk are leading the charge. But I like to believe that good innovation is going to find its funding either way. And I believe that's where we're at with BCI in particular.
I think you're right. I mean, like, and that, you know, we really are like seeing, you know, like some technologies at this point that have really advanced along. And it's like, yeah, I can see this, you know, getting, you know, approved by the FDA someday and like, you know, going into people.
Yeah, and the other way that Musk is bringing attention to is, I mean, he really leans into the potential consumer applications of this, right? So really expanding the market beyond some really, really impactful patient, options, but talking about all the different ways that people may, you know, control computers with their brains more recreationally than as a medical necessity.
You know, but I'll put my chips on Carolina Aguilar and Synchron and folks out there who are MedTech folks who are getting the work done. I think Musk certainly brings some headlines, but if I were to wager on a success, I would wager on, I think, one of the other companies, but that just might be my bias.
Stents are such a tried and true technology. I mean, Synchron having that stent-based BCI just has always just seemed like a really smart idea to me. And, you know, I wouldn't count out BlackRock Neurotech at all either. I mean, they've been working in that space for so long and, you know, they now have like a next gen, like BCI. That's like this very, very thin film.
And Sean just today had a story at MDO about some researchers that have developed a BCI on a chip that is about the thickness of a human hair.
Wow.
Really incredible stuff. The stuff's getting smaller. Who knows where it's going to be 5-10 years from now.
That's a great point. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, this is just advancing just exponentially. We don't know where this is going to land. So exciting stuff. All right, let's move on to category number two. I think we're going to talk about pick our person and company of the year. Kayleen Brown, who or what company wowed you this year?
Well, you know, I don't follow instruction well. So I'm going to lead with that and say that I have two. I had to think through. I know, Tom, this is my thing. But I wanted to reflect at the beginning of the year and then the end of the year. And my second person was a real surprise. So I think it's probably unsurprising that my first top person of the year is Dr. Charisse Sparks. She's the former chief medical officer for Inspire Medical Systems. I had the pleasure of interviewing her for a keynote interview at our Device Docs Boston conference earlier in May this year. And Dr. Sparks's way of seeing the medtech industry and what we need to do as leaders in the industry to advance and move the industry forward in the way that really supports patients and all of the stakeholders in medtech, think is really important. She has been such a supporter of diversity in perspective, diversity in building technologies that do serve that diverse populations and anatomy, different, you know, diverse anatomies. Everything about what she does and how she does it, for me, is how, as leaders in the industry, we should move forward. We have a responsibility to our patients. We have a responsibility to all of the stakeholders. We need to be transparent. We need to be honest. And we need to continue to lead, even through uncertainty. And Dr. Sparks is the real embodiment of that. And then just last week, I had an interview with Rebecca Gottlieb. She's the vice president of advanced sensors at BioLink. I just saw Sean's ears perk up with glucose monitoring there. And it was my very first time of interviewing Rebecca. It's for a January episode of our Women in MedTech podcast. It'll be coming out in January. And Rebecca, the entire time, I thought, this is an innovator. This is why I'm in the industry, so I can learn from these people. I can learn from these brains. So we kind of joked about how Rebecca thinks about the industry and she thinks about technology and these advancements, these huge, massive advancements. So just speaking with her got me really excited. And she believes in advancing the team culture, her own team, technology, every step of the way. And one of the things that she shared with me in the interview, and again, Sean, I think your ears are going to perk up here, is that BioLink is exploring single-stranded DNA as the bioreceptor instead of traditional enzymes to sense what's happening in the body. So because DNA can be designed to recognize different signals, it has a potential to measure many other biomarkers as well. I am incredibly intrigued by that. But more than the technology advancement, I was intrigued by how Rebecca spoke about coming to that conclusion. She was with Medtronic for about 19 years and chose to move to BioLink because of the potential in the future. So when I think about Dr. Cherie Sparks and I think about Rebecca Gottlieb, I think about those two leaders. They lead by asking what's possible, not what's certain. And that, to me, is what we need to do in medtech.
All right. Great choice there. And I know, Jim Hammer, and you introduced me to BioLink a couple of years ago. I remember a phone call we had where I was completely blown away by their technology. So excellent choice there, Kayleen Brown. Sean Hooley, you're next up. Who or what wowed you this year?
Well, like Kayleen, I failed to follow instructions because my company of the year is not actually a company yet, but it is teasing my news of the year. But as Chris Landon mentioned earlier, the Medtronic diabetes separation is on its way. And so Q Dallara, who will be the CEO of MiniMed once that separation is complete, would be my person of the year. And MiniMed will be an interesting company to watch. I think, you know, you have, as Chris mentioned earlier, the partnership with Abbott, which sort of came out of nowhere, but, you know, nobody expected it. And here it is, you know, two of the biggest companies in medtech partnering. So you have that sensor launch, which has just begun within the last couple of months, new pumps on the way. And, you know, MiniMed's an interesting one because they're the only company that actually makes their own CGM in addition to the Abbott one that they're now distributing, but also their pumps and the smart pens. So they have one of the widest ranging portfolios, I guess, of the diabetes tech companies. And so as a standalone company, I think it'll be really interesting to watch. And for Dallara, obviously leading that, you know, she's one of three new CEOs in the diabetes tech space, which Ashley McAvoy at Insulet within the last 6 months. And then Jake Leach will be taking over at Dexcom in just a couple weeks formally, although he's been interim CEO for a couple months now. But yeah, diabetes, as usual, is one to watch, but MiniMed will be an interesting one as well.
So, Sean, now you perked up my ears by mentioning Q Dallara. So one of the very first podcast episodes that I had the pleasure of producing was with Q, and it was the first time I was introduced to her leadership style, MiniMed, and it was, there's a few interviews that stick with you over time that just kind of live rent-free in your head, and that's one of them. So that was in May of 2023. I suggest everybody to Google that. Q Dallara, Device Talks, one word. Fantastic interview.
All right. Thanks for that plug, Kayleen. It's about time someone else tries to sell some product here. What's wrong with you people?
I like the idea of living rent-free in your head. I mean, that must be a
it's very millennial of me.
Chris Neumarker, why don't you offer your person and or company of the year?
Well, my gosh, he just took over in the middle of the year. But wow, Olympus has been doing something since Bob White took over as CEO. You know, and really, like, you know, this longtime Medtronic executive, it's just, you know, really, really cool to be seeing him run this major Japanese medtech that has a big presence, you know, you know, around where you are in Boston, Tom, as well as like here in the Twin Cities where I am. I mean, like a number of milestones hit since he took over. They've been doing some restructuring too, but I mean, man, one of the biggest things that just got my attention was the partnership they're doing with private equity for this like $500 million robotics play, this Swan Endo Surgical, which, you know, bringing in like Stryker's top robotics person to run it as CEO. I mean, this is this is some exciting stuff.
No, great choice for sure. Yeah, no, Bob White was. It was great to see him ascend to the CEO position. Sean, you and I had a chance to speak with him at AdvaMed, and he just brings such energy and positivity to the room. It was a small room, but still,
I was going to say enthusiasm.
It certainly poured out through the doors. But Olympus is definitely making a lot of great news. They just closed on more money for their venture fund. It seems like Chris, you're giving a new markers newsmaker about them once a month or so.
Fantastic
choice, and very happy for Bob White. He's a nice guy. We talked to him a couple of years ago in Medtronic Talks, and just excited to see him to lead a company like this. And Swan, you're right, super super exciting. So, all right, Jim Amran, what's your choice for person or company of the year?
I think we could all agree that Ray Cohen had a pretty good 2025. Yeah. I mean, he had a pretty good 2024 too, right? I mean, last year he sold Axonics to Boston Scientific for about $4 billion. I don't know about you guys. If that was me, I'd find myself a nice quiet stretch of beach real fast. Not Ray. A few months later, he struck another deal with Boston Scientific, getting them into the renal denervation race for $600 million with Sanofi. So he's the board chair there. Okay, maybe he's not a beach guy, right? So I'd go on safari, see some big hats, see some hippos and whatnot. Not Ray. Fast forward to October. We're all together in Santa Clara for Device Talks West, the Davis keynote interview with you, Tom. And you remember, he says, hey, there's an announcement. It's coming the next morning. Nalu Medical, neurostim developer with Cohen as board chair, being sold for $533 million to guess who? Boston Scientific. So I was fortunate to interview Cohen before Device Talks West, and I've already published a couple articles from that and have more on the way. Keep an eye out for that in the January 2026 Leadership in MedTech issue of Medical Design Outsourcing Magazine. I actually think the entire team here will be represented in that next issue. So keep an eye out for that.
I'm working on the article, Jim. It's coming.
Same. Sorry.
There's nothing parenthood has taught me more than patience.
and guilt, Freak. Little bits of guilt. But I agree with Ray Cohen 100%. We ran his interview just a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, and I re-listened to it. And as I said in my LinkedIn post, it was like talking hitting with a major leaguer, you know, just like asking precise questions about how to start a company, how to move a company forward, how to lead a company, when to do this, when to do that. And he's done it. He's done it well. And he's very explicit with his advice and very honest with his advice about how much hard work it takes. Chris Landon, I'm sure you know the CEO role. I'm guessing it's 24/7 kind of gig. And that's something Ray Cohen shared as well. So great choice, Jim Amran. It's Chris Landon, you are, I think, next up. What's your big news or news person of the year, or big company news person? Yeah. Of the year.
So, I looked at, I really want to pick a person here, and I love what Insulet did with the Ashley McEvoy appointment. I think that was a great appointment. The retirement of Gary Guthart and all he did to move robotics forward, which we've already talked about.
Totally.
Honestly, looking at the companies and the great med tech companies that had great years, it's hard to stand above the year that Stryker had. And I really loved how they continue to press the ball forward on what they do really well, which is getting into adjacent segments, driving commercialization and impacting patients. So you look at what they did with the Inari acquisition, as well as the acquisition of the neurovascular assets from Boston Scientific. And you can see how quickly they are implementing their strategy to be a major player in the neurosciences. I think you add those things together, you've got a great company doing great things and really making an impact for patients.
No, great choice. And the same neuro VC I was talking to revealed the Stryker certainly has kicked the tires of some of their neurostim portfolio companies a couple of times. So be interesting to see what happens next year. Stryker moves more into the neuro field.
And also how much more they do with robotics. I mean, that's still like a really, really good question as well. But just a dominant company in the orthopedic surgical robotics space.
Yeah, and we've got Spencer Stiles taking over as COO. So if that is a succession plan, and that is typically how things go, you know, it'll be a consistent strategy. I'm sure he'll follow Kevin Lobo's playbook very closely. Completely very dynamic company. So great choice, Chris Landon. All right, and my choice for person of the year, Kayleen, you and I did a conversation. I had a conversation with Doug Evans of Lung Pacer earlier in the year. Doug, for me, just really personifies MedTech and represents the MedTech story. Folks should check out that conversation. I think we ran it in a podcast earlier this year as well, but Doug lost his son at a tragically, well, it's always tragic, but a tragically young age. And he used his abilities and his know-how and his understanding of what went wrong to make it, to create something to ensure that that does not happen again, or at least is less likely to happen. And he built a company around it, and they got FDA approval, and he's going to create a way for folks to ease off ventilators more easily. It's always one of the things about this job, as you all know, is you hear, oh, they went on a ventilator, and you think it's just something that happens, and you don't realize all that goes into getting them on and off and how damaging it can be to the body. And once you actually start to stop and think about it, of course it's damaging. So Doug Evans and Lung Pacer, just for me, it's a story. I think about him a couple of times a month as just life goes on and as we report on stories. And just a real inspiration for me. So I'm grateful that we had a chance to talk to him a few times and really happy for his success.
He really shows how turning pain into purpose can make an impact in a way that we don't expect. It's a great choice. Absolutely. I'm humbled by his contribution. And more than that, Tom, I'm even humbled by his vulnerability and openness for sharing his story.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not sure if I would be able to do what he does. So grateful that he's part of Device Talk. So, all right, we will wrap things up. We're going to hit the biggest news of the year. So we can run through these fairly quickly. But let's see, who do we have on the lineup card leading off? Sean Hooley. So what's your big news of the year, Sean?
My big news was that it was seemingly the year of the business separation.
Mm-hmm.
Someone can fact check me. I'm sure they happen every year, but it felt like a few really big ones happened this year. You know, going back to when Zimmer Biomet spun off ZimVie and BD spun off Embecta, you know, that was a few years ago. It felt like there hadn't really been such massive ones until, you know, within the space of a year, Medtronic announcing the separation of its diabetes business, J&J announcing planned separation of its ortho business. You also had BD selling its life sciences business to private equity. You had Stryker selling its spine implant business. And if I'm going to cheat a little bit and go back to the end of 2024, Edwards also sold its critical care business to BD. So it felt like they all just kind of came in very quick succession. But it's definitely been an interesting storyline to watch this year, as some of these companies are looking to sort of get leaner and, they always use, you know, synergy or words like that
focus.
To make sure that they're, yeah, focus, narrowing their focus. But they're all doing it, it seems.
Well, when I get it done, my article for Jim Hammer and on MDO will focus on the spinner of DePuy Synthes and what Tim Schmidt had to say about that and their other growth initiatives at Johnson & Johnson MedTech. But Chris Landon, we hear about the pendulum all the time, the pendulum swinging from divesting to consolidating to divesting to consolidating. Does that... I kind of see that pendulum certainly swinging, and it's not a random thing. There are market reasons why this happens, but do you think we'll see more? Is there anything left to divest? Do you think we'll see more of that in 2026 from conversations you've had with folks in MedTech?
I believe when you have the combination of the opportunity to innovate through investment and entities, particularly private equity type of entities that are looking for places to put capital, I think those opportunities are going to continue to find themselves. Consolidation makes a lot of sense when economies of scale can be reached and synergies can be captured. But when it really comes down to creating long-term value through innovation and you have resources like those that are controlled by private equity firms that can be applied to that problem, you get a kind of that magic mix of opportunity.
On the portfolio management front, I think we got to keep an eye on Medtronic with those new activist investors. Imagine that we have not yet seen the end of what they've got planned. And when what do they say when Medtronic sneezes, everyone catches a cold, something like that?
Very colorful. I love it. There you go.
All right. Sounds great. All right, Chris Neumarker, what is your, you are the newsmaker, my friend. You come up with the top news every week. What's your top news of the year? This is an epic choice.
I'm going to stick with our audience, which by far this was the most read story on Mass Device this year. I mean, nearly 90,000 page views. And that was Zimmer Biomet suing Deloitte for, more than $172 million. Accusing Deloitte of what I said was a disaster of an enterprise resource planning software project. Even saying that the company had trouble functioning last year at one point because things were going so bad with that implementation. And Deloitte, they're fighting the case in New York and responded that Zimmer Biomet had a their lawyers said a through the looking glass version of events with this ERP project. But I think our audience is just, really viewing this as kind of a cautionary tale. Like, when you have a major system that your business relies on, you got to be like super careful.
No, it's certainly an interesting story. I didn't realize it was the most clicked on story of the year so far. I mean, the year is nearly over. So, really fascinating. I mean, Zimmer Biomet's achieved a lot of other, more positive and I think concrete things, but
absolutely. Ivan Tornos, the CEO has been, among the CEOs in the industry, probably like one of the most really like just optimistic and hard charging, getting the company to accomplish things. And, they had a big problem with Deloitte. They've taken it to the courts, to get something done about it.
So Deloitte beat out Arnold Schwarzenegger. Unbelievable.
I was hoping to bring up Arnold Schwarzenegger, but we brought up Deloitte. So, okay.
Maybe they're going to have Arnold say something about Deloitte. Like hasta la vista, Deloitte.
Jim Hamran, what is your news of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a bigger or more important story for our industry than the chaos under Trump. I mean, it touches so much of what MedTech does. Bear with me for a little bit. I promise it's not all doom and gloom, but you look back at the beginning of this year, right? Cuts to FDA, other HHS agencies. There's a report out this month telling up how many senior leaders of FDA this year. It's about 90%. We've got the watchdog report out of the government saying FDA doesn't have enough staff to do its job on recalls and ensure that unsafe devices are pulled from the market. Next year, this administration wants to cut the FDA budget by 12%. We've got, I know, Chris, cover your ears. We got costs climbing with tariffs driving inflation. No one knows what these tax rates will be in the future. We've got a crackdown on immigrants and foreign visitors, and that's making it harder or impossible for some of the world's smartest people to come here and go to school, do research, work in our industry, or start the next big thing. So we sounded the alarm on a very troubling trend through a MedTech Big 100 project, and we show that the world's biggest medical device companies as a group are slowing their R&D spending growth to near standstill after double-digit growth in recent years, and that's being driven in no small part by these tariffs. You step back from MedTech and you look at the broader economy and things are getting shakier every day. So MedTech is usually recession-proof, right? I mean, except for the last time, and what about this time? So we're looking at funding cuts to hospitals. Millions of people are at risk of losing their health insurance. We reported on those nearly 400 clinical trials that lost funding through cuts by Musk and his Doge team. Their trials for kids, for cancer, infectious disease, all across the country. So, to the point about is MedTech recession-proof, I mean, we have heard, for device developers, maybe they're going to soon, if they haven't already, have vendors more aggressively seeking their business. Because again, medical design outsourcing, we really focus on those partnerships. And I'm hearing more from well-diversified contract manufacturers and suppliers, some that I'd never talked with before recently, that they want to invest more in their MedTech businesses. Yeah. And it sounds like they're hoping the device industry's, relative resilience will give them a boost, especially with, we see automotive sales slowing down and there's weak demand for consumer electronics like the new iPhone. So, all right. So doom and gloom, what do we do? This is an opportunity for MedTech. I think we keep doing our jobs the best that we can. Stay focused on the MedTech mission. There are patients out there who need our help, and that's what we're here for.
Well said. Chris Landon, as a CEO, the only CEO of a company here on this panel, how any thoughts or comments about the impact on tariffs in particular? How is that impacting the industry from your perspective? And you can speak generally, or if you want to share a specific,
Well, I think what I can say as it relates to the bigger picture of the federal government chaos, and let's be honest, it is chaotic. If you're sitting in my seat or a seat like mine, you are constantly taking in information and trying to figure out what you're going to do with it, whether it is related to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, whether it's related to tariffs, whether it's related to DOGE and cuts in the FDA. All these things affect you and how you manage your business. I think what it's really important, though, is to never take one news item or one issue at face value. It's more important than ever that we dig in and that we engage with our elected officials. I had an opportunity back in March of this year to go on a trip to Washington, D.C., where I engaged in conversations with over a dozen House of Representatives members and Senate members. And they all had the same message, whether they were Republican or Democrat. They had the same message, which is, what do you need from us? MedTech is important to our country, not just to our individual states. It's important to our government. How do we engage? What do we need to know about the policies that are coming out of the White House and coming out of Congress? And so I would just emphasize that. And if I can steal then my news story of the year, because I think it's related to Jim's point, I would point to the FDA, and I'd point to the work that's happening with some of the big imaging companies, GE and Philips in particular, getting new approvals for AI and reestablishing, or not reestablishing, establishing a new way forward for how the FDA is going to regulate AI, allowing learning algorithms to be approved under certain conditions and certain with certain controls in place. That's new in 2025. Before that, we had to have AI that was basically locked at the point, couldn't be learning, couldn't be improving as we go. Now we have a way forward as an innovative medical device and medical technology community to bring learning AI to the market. And we're going to see it first, of course, in the world of radiology, but it's going to quickly show up in worlds like my own world, in neurodiagnostics and cardiac diagnostics, in diabetes and any diagnostic modality. This kind of step forward in the regulatory structure does wonders for innovation and allows big steps forward to occur in terms of how we take care of patients going forward. And so while there are things that are troublesome and tariffs are for sure been a bane for my business, this kind of news is also reasons to rejoice, because this is what allows us to take huge steps forward as an industry. So I would just encourage everyone to take a big picture view when it comes to our engagement with our government and our regulatory stakeholders, because you got to look at the whole thing as a whole. You can't just, you know, get peeled off on one issue and get sideways on one issue and miss the big picture.
Great point. All right. Kayleen Brown, your news of the year?
Well, I think that the team on the call here did the big picture thinking when we're talking about top news stories. I went really literal with it. I chose one news story. And it's actually what inspired my top technology. So just in November, Syncardia announced that it completed its first in vivo implantations of their next-gen Emperor total artificial heart. Why does that matter? Well, it's the first real living test of a fully implantable artificial heart. It's not just bench or simulation. It is the bridge to the future. The device provided stable, energy-efficient blood circulation during the testing. It was each of the three preclinical models were taken off bypass with no issues. It's designed to be fully implantable and driverless, so you don't have that bulky equipment that has kind of been an issue up to now. For me, this is the first meaningful demonstration of a fully implantable artificial heart that may actually behave like a human heart in a living system. So that changes what clinicians or investors and regulators can realistically hope for the next permanent heart replacement technology. I feel like it just changes everything. It's the first real, that sci-fi that I thought it would be 20 years ago, this can't possibly be real life. This is science fiction from 20 years ago. I feel like in November, when I read the article on Mass Device, I realized that we're here and the MedTech has really made it. And I picked up the phone and I called my mom and I said, there's the first fully implantable artificial heart. It's happening. It's real life. And she went, oh, neato. But I was really excited. And everybody that I've shared that with since has really gotten excited. And one of my personal missions has been trying to make MedTech mainstream, because I love MedTech and I want people who aren't in MedTech to love it as much as I do. And sometimes when we get really specific and nuanced, we lose those not in the industry and they don't really understand the impact. So to be able to say that we are now have a fully implantable artificial heart. Yeah. People not in the industry get that. They understand the ramifications of that. They understand how that changes the world that we live in right now.
It's a wow.
It's a wow. It's a real big wow.
I'll see you 20 years and raise you another 20. I think Chris Landon and I may be the only ones who remember the Jarvik heart in the early 80s, kind of capturing headlines. And of course, I covered Abiomed early on when they were David Letterman was pursuing Dr. David Letterman, not the late night host, but the doctor was pursuing his own artificial heart. So this kind of bleeds into my news of the year, just the diligence and patience and of MedTech folks is astounding. Just the never give up attitude. And my news of the year is might be a recency bias, but it's the approval of Hugo Raz. I mean, you're talking about a project that's been in works for over a decade, started at another company before it got onto a Medtronic, gone through several iterations. As we had our interview with Rishi Kamal on last week's episode, you know, I joked that he probably had the second most hot seat in New England compared to Alex Cora of the Boston Red Sox, because folks were just so intent upon seeing what happened to Hugo and getting that FDA approval. And they just kept at it, kept going, kept working. You know, people cast doubts and occasionally aspersions, but the great team over there just kept moving forward. And now I'm just excited by the fact that we have surgical robotics companies that are, I think they've become medical device companies, but they're robotics first. It's going to be really interesting to see when you have a device first company come up with a robot like this one, not an ortho company, but one that has the surgical tools, all that goes in for soft tissue. It's going to be interesting to see how the market responds to that, how hospitals respond to that. It'll be a great test case for Johnson & Johnson in Ottawa, which they expect to file for FDA approval next year. So I think just huge news from Hugo for the industry. So that's my news of the year. All right. Well, that's a great wrap up of the year. I'd like to thank our panel, Chris Landon of Natus. Chris, thanks so much for giving us a different perspective here of someone who's actually out there on the front lines and in doing what we like to write and talk about. So thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Tom, and the whole team. You guys do a great job, and I have enjoyed our affiliation over the last 3 years, despite the common references to pumpkin sausage and Klingon language translation.
Yes.
You guys cover a great industry, and I hope you can tell I'm so excited about the innovation and the combination of investment, innovation and regulation that's happening to bring great new technology to the care of patients. It's wonderful.
Hey, here's a great 2026 for MedTech. Let's go.
Sounds great. All right. Thank you, Sean Hooley of Mass Device, Jim Hammerin of MDO, Caitlin Brown of Device Talks, Chris Newmarker of Mass Device, and of course, Chris Landon of Natus Medical. And we all wish you a happy holiday season. And we look forward to reporting on your success in the new year. So take care, everyone out there in Device Talks.